Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
This is Stephen Strang, and welcome to my podcast. I'm so honored today to have Nina May on my podcast. I recently interviewed her about her new movie, First Lady, which I want to talk about later. But first, she was one of the main sources that I used in my book, God, Trump, and the 2020 Election. Actually, Alveda King, the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., sent me some information that Nina had assembled about the Democratic Party, and I was just absolutely fascinated. And of course, I've known Nina for a number of years, and especially her husband, Colby May, who is a very respected lawyer up in Washington. So let me welcome you, Nina. Thank you for being on my podcast today. And let's talk a little bit about that information that you sent to Alveda and how you did the research and why, and then okay. We'll go from there.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me today. I really appreciate that. About 15 years ago, we did a documentary called Emancipation, Revelation, Revolution, and it was about the history of the civil rights movement in America and the role that both political parties played in it. And the revolution part of it is what happens to conservative blacks today who leave that liberal plantation and embrace the party of Lincoln. Because a lot of people don't know that Abraham Lincoln was not just a Republican, but the very first Republican president that we had from the newly formed Republican Party, which was an abolitionist party. That was the main reason that the Republican Party was formed. In fact, six of the first nine planks of their platform dealt with emancipation, equal rights, voting rights, integration, and that's what it was all about. And so when Lincoln won, of course, the South is still totally entrenched in the idea of slavery, and they were willing to fight a war over it, divide the country over it. And our point has been that the Democratic Party is basically the same party it has always been. It's always been a party of oppression. It's always been a party of control and a reduction of human rights and individual liberties and rights. And now you see them running on a socialist platform, which is exactly that. Socialism is slavery, basically. So when they say, oh, well, the new Democratic Party has changed, well, it really hasn't. When you have someone like Hillary Clinton saying that Robert Byrd, who was a grand kriegel of the KKK, was her mentor and her conscience, they called him the conscience of the Senate. This is just a few years ago. This is not hundreds of years ago. Barack Obama did a fundraiser for Robert Byrd. So it's the same exact party that it's always been. It's always been a party of oppression. You look at, for example, the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments. They were unanimously supported by the Republicans and unanimously opposed by the Democrats. The Democrats proudly founded the KKK. It was the terrorist arm of the Democratic Party. Because now, with all these liberated slaves, they could point them out. They knew that any black was a Republican. So they began targeting the blacks. They would even, the black congressmen, there are 23 black congressmen elected to Congress, all of them Republican. Their very first black senator was a Republican. And they were under such threat, they had to go armed to Congress because their lives were absolutely endangered by these white Democrats. And you're seeing that today. You're seeing that instead of wearing the white hoods, they've got the black hoods on now. That's the Antifa group that is doing the same kind of violence against people that they disagree with. They see someone with a MAGA hat, and they're the enemy. And so history really has not changed a lot in almost 200 years as it relates to the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. The Republican Party is still the party of liberty, of freedom, of the Constitution, of individual liberties. And, we fight for that every day. I'm not an apologist for the Republican Party. In fact, I was raised as a Democrat because in the South, there were no Republicans. I remember hearing as a young girl someone refer to Republicans as the in-lovers. Well, those Republicans, they're just those in-lovers. And I remember thinking, well, what's wrong with that? I mean, doesn't God want us to love everyone? So it really confused me when I heard it. And when I had an opportunity to register to vote, I registered as a Republican, probably one of the only ones in my hometown, because of what I was hearing and seeing, and it was just breaking my heart as a Christian to see the hate and with all these Democrats toward blacks, and we lived in a segregated town. It was a segregated high school. So having lived through that and seeing how the Democrats were literally still destroying the party, segregating the society, I said, I don't want to have anything to do with that. I want to join another party. And, of course, the Republican Party has kind of let me down a few times. So a lot of times they'll say, well, I'm just kind of independent. I'll sort of go where the wind blows me. But the point is that the truth is there. The history is there. It's frustrating that Republicans don't know their history, and they allow themselves to get backed into a corner and called a racist when it's exactly the opposite. They need to turn it on their head, and they need to be empowered by the reality of the fact that the Democratic Party has always been the party of oppression and still is. So there you have it.
Well, people don't know their history, and that's part of the problem. You mentioned the Democrats in the South. They passed the Jim Crow laws, which were basically to take away the rights from the newly freed slaves, now American citizens, because the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment gave them all those rights, and the Jim Crow laws took them away. And every single one was passed by Democratic legislature, signed by Democratic governor, no exceptions. And you're right, the Republican Party's not perfect by any means. I have never really participated at all in Republican politics other than to support some candidates who I really believed in who happened to be a Republican. But, you know, when it comes down to a binary choice between, you know, two people running on a ticket, to me, there's almost no option but to vote for the Republican for all the reasons you're talking about, but also for the abortion issue. And in the book, you talked a little bit, or I quoted you talking a little bit about how abortion has kind of become the cause, like slavery was the cause before. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Well, yeah. I mean, the whole point of slavery was that the Democrats basically had devalued the life of these black individuals, saying they're not really human. They're just property. And we have a right to do with them as we want. And the same thing applies to the abortion industry. This baby is not really a baby or human. It's just property in the belly of this woman, and she has the right to do with it whatever she wants. There are a lot of similarities between slavery and abortion, and it is a battle, I think, that is being fought today, very similar to the abolitionist party that was fought over 200 years ago, almost 200 years ago. So, yeah, there's a lot of similarities there. And again, it goes back to the devaluing of human life. And that's what liberals do. They have this sort of a hierarchy of elitism that some are more worthy than others. In fact, there was a black philosopher, his name was W.E.B. Du Bois, basically a communist. He was around the same time as Booker T. Washington. And they had divergent views on how to reintegrate blacks into society, and W.E.B. Du Bois said that you have what's called the talented tenth, which means there's 10% of the population is smarter and more worthy to rule and control the rest of the population. Well, that's communism. That's socialism. That's what the Democrats are running on right now, that they are elite and they're more worthy to control the rest of us. Booker T. Washington, on the other hand, said, no, every single person is valuable in the eyes of God, and what we need to do is take people that have come out of slavery and train them in these different professions so that they can become proficient in that. And there was a huge increase of black ownership of businesses and blacks in law and in art and music and entertainment and everything because of that philosophy that Booker T. Washington and the Republicans had of the integration of blacks into society. But, of course, the Democrats were against that. Do you know that the first Democrat, black Democrat elected was 100 years after the end of the Civil War, whereas the Republicans had many, many blacks in Congress, and that was in 1965, and that was Barbara Jordan out of Texas. So when we talk about the racism of the Democratic Party, it is not ancient history by any means, and I think that's a point that we need to keep reminding people of over and over and over again, especially when they try and pin that racist label on Republicans. It's just wrong.
And so why do the Democrats seem to get a free pass with African-American voters now with this horrible, horrible history. And how did the Odyssey come from where basically every single freed slave, you know, newly enfranchised, was a Republican, and now the overwhelming majority are Democrats?
Well, one of the reasons is that people don't know their history, and history's been hidden. And it's not taught in school. None of this is taught in school. The Republican Party doesn't even know its own history. I've asked people that work at the RNC if they know who the first Republican president was. They have no idea. Who the first black Republican senator was. They have no idea. It's very embarrassing. It really is. So if we don't even know our own history, and I'll use that as a rhetorical we, if we don't even know that own our own history, then why should we expect Democrats to know our history? Why would a black American know our history if the Democrats have convinced them that we are the racists? They're not going to be interested in finding out. So you have to be equipped with the truth in order to change minds, and that's one of the biggest problems we have. The question about when did it sort of start, when did that, you know, they stopped voting Republican and started voting Democrat, it was a long process, and basically it was up around the time of the Civil Rights Movement, when Martin Luther King was alive, and of course, unfortunately, John F. Kennedy was killed, and Johnson was vice president, and he realized that he could not get elected without the black vote. So he had never been a supporter at all of the Civil Rights Movement, but he decided with his other advisors that he was now going to be supportive of the Civil Rights Movement, and he got all the credit for everything that the Republicans had done, even Everett Dirksen, who had, was the one that was championing the Civil Rights Bill. It was passed by the Republicans. It wasn't passed by the Democrats on the Hill. It was passed by the Republicans. So, again, people don't know their history. And he benefited from the ignorance that people had of their history. And, of course, the Democratic Party has benefited from it. This is an interesting story, and you'll see this in our, if people want to see our movie, Emancipation, Revelation, Revolution. Again, it's a documentary. There's a wonderful interview in there that I think should be part of history. It is amazing. I was interviewing Harris Wofford from Pennsylvania, and he was the one that introduced John F. Kennedy to Martin Luther King. And he met John F. Kennedy when he was standing in the street in Georgetown. He said Kennedy rode past, and he recognized him. He stopped his car, and he says, you know, hi, jump in the car with me on the way up to the Hill, which is maybe a 10-minute ride. Tell me how I can solve this damn civil rights problem. And it's like, okay, in 10 minutes, you're really going to give it just 10 minutes. Isn't that interesting? So he obviously wasn't involved with it. He obviously didn't know, you know, what position he was in. Even Bobby Kennedy was absolutely against dealing with Martin Luther King. I mean, this is all a part of history. It's nothing, something that I'm making up or anything like this. But it was what, so interesting. He said when he introduced Kennedy to King, and then when Kennedy was arrested, Martin Luther King was arrested, someone suggested that John Kennedy call the wife, call Coretta Scott King. So he did. That made the news. The Democrats ran on that. They put out what was called the Blue Bomb. It was a piece of paper saying John F. Kennedy dried the tears of the eyes of Coretta Scott King while her husband is in, you know, jail or whatever like that. And everyone thinks, even the people in the Democratic Party will tell you, they think that's what put John F. Kennedy in the White House, was that one little act of graciousness towards Coretta Scott King. The question is, why didn't Nixon do anything? Well, this is the days before the internet, before Twitter, before anything. He didn't know what had happened. He didn't know that Martin Luther King was in jail. He had no idea. So when he finally did say something or do something, it was too late. Kennedy got all the credit for it, and the rest is history, basically. And that was the beginning of the Democrats getting the credit for the Civil Rights Movement.
Well, I think this is very interesting, and that's why I included it in the book, God, Trump, and the 2020 Election. And there's a lot more detail in that. And as I was just reflecting on what you were saying, I realized that I was going to deal with this some in the book, but when I got your material, suddenly I realized I needed to craft an entire chapter around it. So I want to thank you for that, and I'll encourage people to read the book. There's a lot more. And also repeat again this documentary and maybe some of your other documentaries. I know that there are some things on YouTube because I looked it up and watched them myself. I want to do this, and I also want to put some links in the newsletter so that people can follow up on this themselves.
Okay. Yeah, it's called Emancipation, Revelation, Revolution. We call it ERR for short. In fact, I think if you go to errrvideo.com, you can download it. And the sequel is called Reparations, Who Should Pay? And this is a discussion we definitely need to have, because I say you tack the bill to the door of the Democratic Convention, the DNC, because they're the ones that created a segregation in our society. They kept that alive. They kept the concept of separate but equal alive, and that was whole Plessy v. Ferguson, on and on and on. I mean, if there is reparations to be paid, it should be the Democrats, because they were willing to divide the nation in a war to keep slavery alive. The Republicans were the Union. That was the Union Party, or the Union, the American, basically, were the Republicans in the North. So they were willing to fight. So you had people dying in a war to prevent slavery. So should their families be held responsible for paying reparations? I mean, how do you draw that line? So I think it's a discussion that we need to have, and I know that Kamala Harris has talked about it, several people in Congress, but it never seems to get any legs, and it's probably because they realize that we would have to present evidence to prove that reparations should be paid. And once you submit the evidence that it was the Democrats that were keeping all of these horrendous laws in place, again, like you were saying, Jim Crow and, you know, the founding of the KKK and all, they were keeping all this in place. You go, well, of course they're going to have to pay the bill. So I think that's why you hear it for a little bit, and then it goes quiet, and then you hear it for a little bit, and then it goes quiet. But we need to take the mask off and say, let's do this.
Well, when I saw the documentaries that you've done, and they're very well done, I knew that you were talented in this area. And then I heard that you were making a Hollywood-style big-screen movie called First Lady. And as I looked into it, I thought, well, this would make a great podcast. So I'll invite my listeners, if you miss that podcast, to look on the Strang Report just a couple of weeks ago. And we talk about it. And I went to see it yesterday. The day before we recorded this podcast, and I was blown away. Nina, I knew you were smart, but I just, you wrote that, didn't you? I mean, you're a very, very creative writer. The plot kept taking all these turns. I kept thinking to myself, where is this going? And it just surprised. And, you know, I'll admit, I don't watch chick flicks very often, and I'm not drawn to romantic comedy, although if it's well done, of course, it's an enjoyable movie, which it is. And I just encourage everyone. I don't know, you know, how long it'll be in the theaters, or it'll probably be on DVD. But I really wanted to just say that I think it was very, very well written. The acting was good. The plot was good. The photography was good. How in the world did someone who is basically, I'm going to say, an activist, really you're an activist on the abortion issue, and of course you work with your husband a lot. By the way, I saw his cameo along with Alveda King.
Yeah. And a
couple of other people that I recognized, but I just didn't know their names.
So yeah, we had Congressman Dick Scholz and his wife Nancy were there, and let me see who else was in that. My son had a cameo, my husband had a cameo, Alveda. There are several other friends that were in there. I don't know if you know Holly Bagley. I'm trying to think of some of the others. Thank you for your compliments of that. I really appreciate it. We had a blast doing it. And, yeah, I wrote it and directed it and had so much fun with Nancy Stafford and Corbin Burnson. And we just had a blast. We had so much fun. Here's the thing is there really are not that many family-friendly romantic comedies. They've all gotten to be PG-13 and even R-rated, and you just can't go and watch them. I mean, whether you're alone or whether you're with your family, you cannot see them. So I wanted to do something that the whole family could enjoy together, because it's been a long time since the family's been able to go and watch something in the theaters that's not a cartoon. You know, and so, and it's been literally 20 years since there was a PG romantic comedy in theaters in the country, which is crazy. I mean, it's just unheard of. So we wanted to change that. And it's going to be in some theaters for another week. It's going to be in some theaters for just today and tomorrow. And then other theaters, it'll be just matinee for another week. So it's it just changes. You'll have to go to firstladymovie.com and look at the theater tab, and you'll see if it's in your area. But it's still all over the country today and tomorrow. So you have those two opportunities.
Well, we'll leave it there, and I'll encourage people to go see the movie, share this with others, and I want to thank Nina May for taking time from a very busy schedule to be on my podcast, and I thank my listeners for listening today, and come back tomorrow for another interview, probably a little bit eclectic. As a longtime journalist, you know, I recognize a story when I see it, and randomly I run across a lot of interesting people or have a lot of interesting experiences. So while some podcasts are really focused, mine tend to bounce around, but it all has to do with the Christian community, with the spirit-filled perspective, something you won't get a lot of other places. And Nina May, I respect you and your husband so much. You have your role models, you're activists, you get things done, you're highly respected, and God bless you for all you do.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. I really appreciate that. Bless you. Bless you for what you do. You do an amazing job.
And thank you for listening today to my podcast. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.